At the end of this presentation, that those I can And then if you look at the last thing, The presentation about the audit finding on Department of Home Affairs is one slide at the bottom. The rest is the standard information by the AG about what is audit and how he audits and how to interpret audit. I'm trying to check because it is what, close to 50 slides, and only one slide speaks about Home Affairs. So it's not possible to go to the slide on Home Affairs on the audit finding. So that the rest of the academic information about the audit environment and audit and general audit and what the auditor general does, it's a, we can see it after, if we really have time about that with the actual audit finding, which was a post-question to the team, I think.
Thank you. Yeah, we appreciate the input that you have made, Honorable Gadi. But remember that exactly what you have said, that it's academic information, that's exactly what we have requested. And that's exactly what we are expecting. That's why this particular presentation is characterized as a workshop type presentation. Remember that last slide you are talking about, you are talking about the previous audit outcome. It is not the current one that we are working on that you are talking about. We are here to be actually taken through how the Auditor General handles the audit. And what is then that out of the audit opinion or whatever of the Auditor General, how can we extract the oversight tools out of it so that we are actually being made prepared to be able to handle the Department of Homeland. But with the previous slide that you are talking about, it is merely to give us an indication on the department's performance in the previous audit for us to be able to follow the explanation of what to look for and how to look for those things and make sure that we perform our oversight role over it. So we have characterized the only challenge, I think, is that you arrived a little bit late. It's a workshop, almost a workshop. We are being trained now, but trained on the relevant departmental information, although it's in the previous one, but also for us to just merely understand the audit, what is it that we can get out of audit, and what is it that we can read out of an audit report, and what we can read, so that we don't create expectations that doesn't exist when we handle the department. I'm sorry that you may be academically too ahead of us, and feel a little bit bored, but just be patient with some of us that are lowly educated and less informed, so that we actually just get on par, so that when we engage the department, at least we have got some basic knowledge of what we're supposed to be doing. Just pardon us a little bit so that we can help. Thank you very much.
Okay, now thank you. Chairperson, I thought you told me you were going to deal with the agent report on OMS. But now I think you have clarified that this is a workshop on AG.
Thank you very much. We still want to handle the department on his audit results. Big time. Still coming.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Next section we speak, and this is actually where we come into it, what this area was, and we go back to the index, is combined assurance. Now, your first level of assurance, where we speak of your management assurance, basically your first line of defense. And combined assurance framework, ideally the same, even at the, when you look at your management of your entity, when you look at your common office or your common authority, together exactly property. From those three parties, you need to get as a committee, you need to get sure that the information has been provided you with the quarterly performance reports, whether it's the annual performance report, whether it's a financial statement, you need to get the assurance that management has implemented appropriate actions, processes, that there's proper oversight, that you know, you need to know that the county officer has taken appropriate action, may require, when required, and timely. And that the executive authority has also overseen the whole process to make sure that the information that is produced, without taking all the other level of assurance, that the information that is produced firsthand has got some level of integrity. If you don't have that assurance, then decisions are going to be made on incorrect information. So it's critical that when you start looking at this level of assurance, you can define the level that is extensive, but when you start looking at starting at the capacity of our partners, the capacity of the humble bodies and the quality. You know, since it does, you know, in terms of what the department is executing, have we got the proper skills in place for the person to execute on their mandate to achieve those certain goals. The next level of assurance, then we come on the oversight assurance. We speak of coordinating and monitoring institutions, your internal audit and your external audit. And once management producers get the information, they make certain decisions. They either show up with their hands or their heart and say, this information is the best I can provide to you to the best of my ability. Then you have an insurance level that comes in, that is your, you know, when you look at your one leading and one institution, those are your entities like your national treasury, your public service, the Department of Public Service Administration, your public service commission, where the department provides information and reports. Like the national treasury, the department will provide monthly reports on compliance, on compliance with legislation, on how it's doing against its budget, how it's spending, its spending trends in terms of its budget, how it's collecting the revenues and distributing. Those bodies would then, you know, the expectation would interrogate that information, communicate with the department, expect to correct the question or request information or answers to the question. Then within the department you have an internal audit function. That internal audit function basically looks at the controls in the department. The processes that produces the information that you are relying on, internal audit basically is sort of gives you assurance regarding the control of those processes. Those processes keep your mind on those processes that produce that information. Because ultimately, if those processes fail, then you have a problem in terms of information that's going to come out of you. You may not have assurance, or you may not place reliance on that. And then you start looking at mitigating factors to say, is there something else that can get to me assured? Within that departmental environment, you have the audit committees as well. Internal audit function reports to the audit committee. Audit committee has, you know, looked at the risk assessment process, and then based on that risk assessment, internal audit will execute that function. Now, it is very important that your audit committee is strong, that they are able to take hard decisions, difficult decisions, that they are able to demand corrective action where required. This committee meets on this committee meets on at a minimum of quarterly basis. So they interrogate the financial information of the department. They interrogate the expected to interrogate the annual performance report of the department, but also the quarterly reports. Also issues where, you know, on the reporting to the committee on disciplinary action. So this committee oversees that. So that's why we say it's important. This committee is a very important function that gives you that level of assurance as well. When it comes to your third level of assurance, where you see your independent assurance providers, and then it's these committees here. It's your portfolio committees, your public accounts committee, I think we spoke about that, and to look at your financial statements, look at your audit reports, and then your national assembly. Your portfolio committee, I don't think that's the portfolio committee, what you do, because you're quite aware of what you do. The public accounts committee, as I say, people look at certain entities where there are certain points of interest that they need to take note of. Example, the departments or entities that have qualified reports or worth opinions, entities that have got significant irregular expansion, entities maybe who have specific fraud. It will depend on the committee, but they will look for certain accounts it was to book and then also ask and request certain corrective action. I think what recently what was the presentation of the last 2 weeks where there was a presentation in the authorized expenditure by the Department of Affairs over the years. Then your National Assembly, it provides external benefit of liability checks and credibles for national provincial government. So that's still an overarching number. But before we get to the processes, you know, it's almost like a football game, you know, where you have your midfielder that they only not sure defense, but they will try and stop the through, but each kind of defense is there. They will give you different levels of assurance. The expectation is you have extensive, you need extensive assurance, but a combination of bodies in bodies for skills, you can then get assurance that the information that comes out of it. The next table shows you the support and health credit that we think of in comprehensive merit. That's basically your type of human here. You know, start off with your state of nation address, then goes on to, you know, your budget speeches,
usage of popular voting. So the standard basic regime is not that, you know, but like I say, I think you are in a better position. Then we went to the audit manager, and the broker basically what the audit agenda does. The legislative requirements, we had our AGFA, our mainly comes from the Constitution, and then we deal with the public order as well. The national department has the Public Finance Management Act, your public entities have certain sections, your public entities in the national sphere have certain sections, comply with certain sections of the PMA. Applies to the public entity side in the county of the responsible county of government. Then there's your treasury regulation, and then there's circular guidelines, instruction of all of the treasury issues to national departments to clarify certain things that in your PSLA and your treasury regulation to make sure that the alignment and understanding of the intention of national treasury will be adopted by the legislation. The next one is the frame of information. Program performance information and your public service regulation. Now, these items, your public service regulation basically governs the human capital side of things in national government, okay, in provincial government. That speaks to national departments mostly, say, the legislation governs who may be appointed, when they be appointed, when the methodology determines what we know, and all the regulations that go study. Your framework of MDPR that you speak of, that is the document that National Treasury issued to the National Department and your entity, your commercial bank, to guide how the department will prepare the performance information. So when you prepare the indicators, its targets, it's basically got the rules, if you want to call it that, in terms of how those documents are prepared, how those targets must look, and then reorders terms of those documents. Okay. So when you look at the report on the performance against freedom and objective, you look at how guidance is that document, in a sense that the national treasury document. Likewise, when you look at when we audit funding, when I'm further down the presentation, I'll speak to you about what we report on, the scope of the audit, and we audit also compliance with legislation. This is what this is the key focus here in terms of legislation. We look at the public finance management, your place regulations, your public service regulations. Okay, and then the regulatory audit process, we say what is important in the public sector is very different from the private sector. We comply with the same standards. There's a set of standards we audit in the international standards on auditing that we comply with. You find that your, you know, throughout the world, external auditors will also comply with it, whether it's either the public sector or the auditors. But there are certain additional, you know, the scope of our audits in the public sector extends beyond that what the private sector would do. What we say is that we assess the stewardship of public funds, the implementation of government policies, and compliance with key legislation. So basically, as I mentioned, when we audit expenditure of the department, when we look at the revenue that the department collects, we look at it from a different slant, in the sense that it is the public money. When you look at revenue collection, for example, the Department of Home Affairs has a significant revenue collection. So when we look at the problem in the area, if somebody has a bigger change in government pay, well, if you look at the department, the purpose needs funds. I think funds certain initiatives. So, but when you see the collection of revenue in the state, although revenue collection would not be significant to a department, but where it doesn't collect, if a revenue then there's an issue. So again, it could impact on government in other aspects of it, where funding is required. We say implementation of government policies, basically looking at the mandate and looking at the initiatives, you know, that is coming from the budget, from the legislative initiative, from the legislature. And then compliance with legislation. The scope of our audit is required in the Public Audit Act. And then we provide assurance that the financial statements are complete from material statements and they will impact the user's
you want to punish them. So basically, what he says is provide reasonable assurance, not absolute assurance. That means they don't do it because of their certain inherent limitations in order process, and also in the control environment, we say, in order does not give you absolute assurance. Yeah, it gives you reasonable, because what he says, takes on a sample basis. So if you take, for example, a department could have about 300,000 transactions, we don't have the sample represents a sample of those transactions. For those reasons, that I would say, it doesn't give you absolute assurance. We've put in the usefulness and reliability of the reported performance information. So basically, what we look at is, I think, split those two areas up. Usefulness, when you start looking at the indicators of the sample that's passing, you get the document dimensional pressure provided, and we say, does this information, is it the same as what was approved? Does it align to government policy? Or if there were changes made during the year, were those changes approved? So that we don't have a situation where entities unilaterally change their indicators to suit them, or their targets to suit them. And also we look at then what is being measured. Does it make sense? Sometimes you find people making things that's got nothing to do with the mandate of the market. So that's why when you look at it, when you speak of usefulness today, you look at the indicator, you look at the target, and you say, does it manage the same criteria? The other part of it is we speak of reliability. The reliability is the actual performance that this partner is reporting. So if they report in their quarterly performance report or the annual performance report that they achieve a certain level, whether they achieve what was intended or they achieve less, we audit that and we look at that information. And when we say it's not reliable, we then what is being reported is, so for example, the Department of Homeland Affairs says, I need to issue 100,000 ID documents to individuals, first ID issues within 30 days. And if we say it's not reliable, then we say the information is being reported, we could not validate that what was reported. So therefore, the reliability continues to be covered. Then important material non-compliance with key legislation. And when we say material, it doesn't mean that there are issues of non-compliance. If we say there's something in the audit report in terms of non-compliance, it doesn't mean that's the only issue of non-compliance. We do an assessment from the audit process, and the items that you feel that are key that you need to understand, and those will be reported. When I say feel it's not a subjective process, it's a subjective, it's basically consistency throughout government, there's a methodology in the process coming. And then what we also look at in the final analysis, when you look at the audit report, is once you've reported all these matters, whether it's financial issues, compliance issues, performance issues, then we will speak of internal control deficiencies, the root causes that cause those issues. But we feel that after additional findings from that understanding we've obtained of the entity and after discussion with management, and also the other, the assurance providers that you can on all the children. After all those discussions, I want to say, what really caused these failures, these things to fail? That is, for one, not comply with legislation or similar financial information, or some information, what caused it? So that's where we say the control deficiency. We often perform performance audits, but I'll keep that to that later in the presentation. The performance audit has a different slant, a different objective in your audit of your financial statement, your regularity audit. And just to highlight what an audit does do, as I said, it doesn't provide a guarantee. Okay, as I said, it provides reasonable assurance. Basically, for users, you should assure that audit has been done in terms of methodology, it complies with certain standards, and it's on a certain review process. Okay. As I said, there are inherent limitations. I've mentioned some of them. I think the other areas that I need to mention on the what it doesn't give you is it doesn't give you assurance that service delivery has state interest. I mentioned on your report, the objective is always saying the report on the
usefulness and reliability. The indicators is that your areas are correct, and whether your information that reported finds the final achievements to find whether that information is reliable. You don't go further to say, have you achieved a certain service that you don't need to also, the audit is not intended, it's not directed towards you. In a regularity audit, what it does is, well, the audit's responsibility is considered fraud in the process. So, while you're auditing, there are certain fraud risks that you would need to take into account, but it's not specifically directed. You know, there are specific orders that are directed towards detecting fraud or uncovering fraud or investigating allegations of fraud. That's your audit's not done. You just need to have reasonable assurance in order to cover certain risks regarding fraud. And then slide we have the ASA audit. Basically, we have the regular audit, which is provided with the services. We have the regular audit, the work of the financial statements, in terms of the mandate, in terms of what the legislation requires, requires the audit, which generally speaks at the PFMA as well. In your regular audit, it's split. We have a financial audit and we have an information systems audit. But when we say split, you basically do those two together. The information that you assurance on the information that you divided the part. So on information systems audit side, you know, eventually you want to move to a stage where you can rely on the department systems of that process. So an information systems audit will look at the computer system in the department. What you do is that you look at certain areas, which you go IT governance, basically the overall, the overarching frame for information technology in the department. We get user access management. What we look at that specific area is today, how secure are the systems within the department? Is it open to outside access? Can someone penetrate the system externally, internally? Is access restricted to only those people that are authorized to use the system? We speak of security management is in the same way that you said keep internal and external access. And obviously when you look at your government systems, you take your department home there, especially those systems have to be very secure. Okay, so that's why when you look at the system, you need to make sure that your sort of framework or your curtain around it is strong. You know, it's like an iron curtain around it. You don't have unauthorized access. And we look at IT continuity. They're basically saying, well, in the case of disaster, you know, how soon will the department be able to get back on its feet to render the services? When we look at these two orders, we're saying, again, as I mentioned, your financial statement audit is formed in terms of your financial statement auditing and your information systems audit is on guidelines issued in a separate information systems environment. These are performance annually. This is the annual audit that we do every year. It may change the scope of information system as an area matures within another section of the group. Then our value add process. We've got two other orders that we do is what we say the value add process on your annual forms or your annual regulatory audit. That audit may highlight certain aspects that need further probing. So we then have two other services. We call it a performance audit and we have investigation. As I mentioned, the regulatory audit is not geared towards fraud. Okay. Your investigation could potentially assist you with certain fraud allegations that you discovered during your audit, or there's certain things that you are required by either both side committees or departments to investigate them. Then we have an investigation, we have a unit that will look into that area. We have an performance audit unit. The performance audit side does not look at the whole financial statement. It's got a different focus, it's got a different scope. Basically, we speak of three E's when we speak of performance audit. We speak of economy, efficiency, and effectiveness. When we speak of those, the same, were goods procured economically and were they applied efficiently? So basically saying, well, in terms of the depend on those goods, what is the best structure got for those goods. And when you say efficiency is to say, did you reduce the right number of resources to execute and, you know, to execute a certain function, a certain project. And effectively, when you apply those resources, you didn't achieve what you intended to achieve. So the executive work is the same. Look at your financial statements, your financial management department, contractual role, and position. In the process, our investigation side of forensic auditors, we use them, you know, with us, the executive auditors, that we have a duty to consider fraud in order, so they will assist us to identify certain risks that they fraud. They do fraud training and research, and they do, you know, quality check on the work that we generate as well as done. So what you see, there's certain focus areas in the public sector at the moment in terms of the data afterwards. You'll find that we look at procurement. Okay, so because we consider procurement to be a high risk of fraud, the public sector procurement. So our investigations unit will assist us in developing procedures and execute the procedures. But that's across government, across all public entities, all departments, where you have a consistent approach to get certain aspects of it. So that will be where you get what we call conflicts of interest, where you have people that are involved in the film process, for example, they also have a certain interest. So those are examples of what they have investigations to be successful. We get forms of it that we basically look at economic effectiveness, we get value for money and services, which are forms of it. It's not just your reality of use, like I said, across the financial state, your forms of it will look at a certain aspect of a process. For example, you know, come back to the hiring issues, you have a highly first issue in the National Department of Homeland Forms of the rules that will, for example, what is the turnaround time between application and questions, application and passing and over a document. So to look throughout that, we'll just look at that process. Auditing, examples of the findings that we have on the economic side, we're saying needs assessments were not always done. So basically, what you'll find is that the department will procure certain goods or services without determining, you know, do I really need this thing? Do I have the capacity internally to execute or to do that service? That's one of the focus areas also when we look at the procurement, the horizontal audit, is to say, when the department is just consulting, the question that will always arise is to say, what type of consultant did you use and were they special skills? So if you always ask the question, if it's a department for a financial consultant, it's the same that you're supposed to have a finance function. Because it makes sense that you have, you know, financial consultant associated with your financial state. And there's a question to say, and we'll go further down to say, is someone that's been employed in a position like a chief financial officer or a chief director, is the third person not in terms of that skills, or is that person just not in their job? And then, so you ask yourself, saying, so why are we paying for all that any employee to do the best service? So that would be an example where you say indeed assessment. Compared to the learning processes, for example, we're not always followed. Those areas you ask yourself, besides the only questions you ask yourself, saying, but why was this not done? Is that because then it goes against the grain of the Constitution? You know, you should go into the transparency of pay and critical procurement process. So we look at it saying that if everyone given equal opportunity in terms of the suppliers to bid for the process, and then the last thing I ask is the department to get better for money. Because if you don't go through a competitive process, you wouldn't know what is the best price you would pay for. Or so you speak of contracts were open-ended in terms of cost and time. Basically, you find contracts do not serve you. You know, you don't have, you don't hold suppliers accountable. So the contract is open-ended, cost and time, You don't say, okay, this is a budget, you know, you're not putting a cattle or you don't say, let's deliver it. So they give the supplier time to, you know, like, take all the cattle to spend as much as possible and not to deliver on time. So those are examples where we think, in terms of economically, you know, forms of it, those are fine. In terms of efficiency, we say in project work, then because of lack of project management and monitoring, payments were made in excess of the amount approved. The document archiving system was not adequate to change. So when you look at the efficiency, it's saying, look at this one, payments were made in excess of the amount approved. It's basically saying, well, what is the need for the supply efficiency? It is to say, well, if you authorize the contract to authorize for a certain amount, and I think something that comes to mind is we think of the World Cup as a the amount out of the paying for it. Understand? In those areas when you get efficiency, you say those resources will be efficient. And then in terms of effectiveness, projects will not very much determine whether objectives were met and determine the benefits received. So basically something was this was procured, surface was rendered, and at the end of the day you think, well, he did get what he said to get out of it. And then on investigations, we said we area for police is the support assessment, the special forensic engagement in certain cases, and they have a request to follow the general to perform certain investigations that we say in exceptional case and exceptional case. Then we take fraud research and training. The unit of the police system, investigate best practices and also my chemistry expertise in the general. Then we look at what the regular and what it does about form and the definition of performance audit. You know, we've got the audit of performance against 3 terms of objectives and then we've got your performance audit. I think there's a huge, people are unsure of the two. It's a mistake. The mistake the two will be the one and the same. I just want to clarify that your performance audit is different from your regular audit or your audit of performance against aims and objectives. Because if you look at those factors, you see in the first factor, your aims and objectives audit is mandatory, must be performed annually in terms of legislation. Whereas your performance audit is saying that the discretion is important. I think there will be certain sort of discretion in the focus areas. Highlight your department and there may be a request either from the department or home recommendations to the key and objectives you say express an opinion or conclusion which your home ability doesn't. Your key term objectives you report annually, your performance audit it could stand a few years depending on what you're looking at the scope of that audit. And your freedom objective is already done as part of the regulatory audit. Your performance audit is not it's a special one. Today, depending on what area you're looking at, you may involve a significant number of specialists in that audit. And then, what we do, when we say the objective is review and presumptive the validity and completeness of the information. So that's what's actually reported in the end of the performance of the report. But the degree of performance audit is looking at the three is focusing on the scheme. Then we take this where they are commonly said there's reporting an entity level and there's taking off the report, which will be commonly said for the week. Next, but then we look at the annual audit process. Now, the audit started with we got the audit of an engagement that each year. Then we do a plan. So that same process, we do the information you've already gathered. From the department, get further information about changes that they have to take as a place to detect. And then we perform a risk assessment, and from that risk assessment, we design certain procedures to address those risks. Those risk assessments are informed by the risk assessment done by the audit committee, and also, as auditors, in terms of audit standards, we need to look at certain areas. When the accounting officer puts together financial statements on the day, a certain assertion is made regarding those financial statements. For example, we always see these relative things, the amount balances are measured, the surgeon sold all of 13 years by valid confession due to the informed conditions that we included in the correct one. So we have to hold them against those assertions to say, to give assurance that when the government makes an assertion, that we give assurance to the users of the financial information that those true, that they know material mistake regarding the information that they make. Appropriate and must be relevant. When you say appropriate, it must be in terms of what the department does, and it must measure what you intend, what you intend with it. It must carry further delivery. And when you say relevant, it must relate logically to what the department does.
Okay, thank you.
When you look at your charges, we speak of the smart criteria, and saying it's not acceptable, it must be achieved, available, it must be achieved, so it must be relevant at the time. So basically, as a committee, you interrogate the department's performance on the board of and say, how is the department achieving its performance objectives for the financial year, quarterly, how they put next. On certain things, it would be make sense when you look at it to say, a lot of the targets are every year end of 31 March or achievement date of 31 March, so that's a financial year. Now, the question you ask is, how do you measure something like that if you don't have benchmarks for your quarter? You know, if you say, I'm interrogating on a quarterly basis, then what am I interrogating?
then shouldn't there be a quarterly benchmark, say, a quarterly unit at this level? So for example, if you develop your policy or you want to put a policy document on the table and develop it, get a draft bill, and say quarter one of this, like to achieve this, quarter two I'd like to achieve this, quarter three, and at the end of the year, this is what we want to achieve. Think about what then all the committees do is to establish efficiencies. So there are certain targets that you can basically work on in the last month of financial year, about March, and you can achieve them. You know what I'm saying? So you don't have to do anything for the rest of the financial year. I think when we come to the final of the I think very specific in terms of what is required in terms of the internal time. So you look at specifically your ID issues, your work permit, and things like that. When you come to the next year, you start there, you start looking at it and you say, you guys start looking at these aspects, you're not going to get to the end point by the one March. Okay. Typical example is the IDS markup. Okay, if you go back, if you look at initial tension was to have the out by 31 December, to have the 31 December 2012. Okay. So the question is, points to say that if you have quarterly charts, that in a very annual basis, 3 yearly basis, where you have benchmarks each year to say, where you say it's a 3 year project, in the first year this is where we need to be. On a quarterly basis, this is where we need to be. That enables the committee to look at it and how it's going to department progressing, if there are certain concerns, to highlight those concerns, and this one going to those solutions in place. But as I said, that's the importance of having these when you set time bounds, measure these time bounds. But for the most part, a lot of the NCs, when they have time bounds, it's basically relevant to a financial system. Okay, I think if you put on the quality of the individual small targets to see how they're doing. Okay, then the next item is how to interpret an audit report. I want to remember to use the thing you can have an easy audit report. If you can go to the audit report, you take what they call a mock audit report. What you'll find in that audit report, it starts off with this, the scope of the audit, the requirements, what is the responsibility, and then starts the basis for qualifying conclusion. Okay. Now, it's not your typical audit report. Your exceptions are your qualified audit reports. For the most part, your financial statements are not your audit reports. What you find in the public sector are quite a few unqualified. So if you go to the slide, if you look at the slide here, the first one you have is an opinion. The first one you see, you can have four opinions, there's actually five. The first one you see on the next slide, but if you look at the opinion, it certifies your public sector. And for the most part, everyone's lying on that yellow, the yellow block. Where if you say unqualified with findings on compliance and three terms of check. So everything I was speaking about earlier, the mandate is the scope of the regulatory audit, the annual audit, look at the financial statements, we look at compliance with legislation, and you look at the report of three terms of objectives. So what you're saying is unqualified is in terms of the financial statements. We have not found any the material misstatements in the financial statements that cause us to believe that those balances, disclosures are materially investigated. What may have happened, we may have had material findings compliance with laws and regulations, or the material findings regarding predetermined objectives, the form of predetermined objectives, as I mentioned before, is basically the usefulness and reliability criteria. Usefulness, like I say, as I mentioned earlier, basically said, the example is to say you report on an indicator, annual performance, they was never approved, it's not in your strategic plan, or there's an indicator of the strategic plan that you have not reported on your annual performance report. Things like that, that's what you call that will detail what you speak of consistently. Only saying your indicator, you cannot audit your indicator because it's not well defined, it's not specific, it's not relevant. Let you manage or do not see processes that produce information. So the opinion in that case would say the financial statement gives a true and fair view.
accordance with applicable financial rules. It's important to know that if depending on that entity is reporting, it will refer to the framework. For your national department of home affairs, it's what we call the modified cash system that's issued by national treasury. I think also when you look at the special department of home affairs, it will differ from other departments. You know, one of the requirements criteria for set of financial statements is for to be compared. So that means if you pick up home affairs, you pick up another department that's for some collect revenue as well. And you compare the two sets of financial statements. You should be able to compare the two and say, well, this department collects so much revenue that you know, line by line you should be able to have that comparability criteria. Now, home affairs is not in certain areas if there will be certain things that it deviated from your framework, you know, your accounting framework. That will be National Treasury would have given the authority, but then we have normally have an issue made a parent of, you know, to highlight to the user to refer to certain paragraphs in the report in the accounting policies that will say that National Treasury has given the department the sponsor, so maybe for that aspect it would not be comparable to another department. So if you look at it in the past, the previous financial year, we spoke about the revenue, where National Treasury allowed the department and the departure to account for revenue differently from other departments. So if you look at normally how revenues are coming for in terms of, like if you take your Department of Public Works, your government and claim the lease income, okay, it will differ from home affairs, because home affairs have a different kind of initial basis. So it wouldn't be able to compare the two departments revenue and say, let's see how this department is doing compared to the other department in terms of collection. And say, wouldn't be a fair comparison because there's the department in claim in a certain way. So when we look at that, we think you need your financial statements, you just be cognizant of looking at those paragraphs and looking at the accounting policy and understanding the aspect of it. Then what we go down to say is a qualified opinion. That means that we found material misstatements, but they're material but not pervasive. When we say pervasive, we think it doesn't affect a lot of account balances in the financial statements, or it doesn't mean that the item, you know, it totally distorts the view of the financial statements opinion. You understand? So qualified opinion is basically if you're looking at a certain aspects of the financial statements, you say except for these aspects. So if it's a revenue, if it's assets, if it's expenditure, you say except for the expenditure, material misstatements and expenditure, you feel the financial statements fairly present in terms of the framework. It's a qualified opinion. Then the last two opinions, your disclaimer and adverse, are basically your worst type of opinions you can have. And audit process. Your disclaimer of opinions to say, the auditor will say, well, because of the lack of appropriate support information, where policy could not get sufficient supporting documents or explanations or evidence to support a company balance, then you move to a disclaimer of opinion. That would be in a case where it's material aggravation. So that means it's not just contain to an account balance or loss of transaction, you think without a set of financials, you can't rely on the set of financials. And your last opinion is evidence opinion, you think. The information that's presented there is not correctly presented. We're saying that it will be normally just agreements with what has been done, what management has done in terms of the accounting framework, in terms of the compliance of the accounting framework, and also it will be subjective. So you say, okay, for instance, it affects the whole set of financial statements, it's not just contained to certain areas. And that will be a person and the policy. When you look at the last slide, you can see that the Department of Home Affairs, we'll talk about history later, but I think last year we just had a qualified opinion in certain areas. This is now the slide here, which is a green, this is basically a this is this is where all entities, you know, we really aim to for all entities. When we say good administration is characterized by financial unqualified financial statement, that means it's free from material misstatement, there's no material findings on compliance with laws and regulations, there's no material findings on your report and it doesn't object it. So, as I said, it would be an idea when you look at this whole thing, it wouldn't be about the yellow, this is the thing that you make sure that you think around it. Under the this is the thing. I think what we must highlight and what we run into, you know, a lot of discussions on and emphasis on many paragraph does not mean the whole issue is not free. Okay. Because a lot of people are of the view that if the department has an emphasis on many paragraph, then they are hands. And emphasis on many paragraph is just to highlight to the user certain aspects which you want to draw the user's attention to the financial thing. So, to give you an example, if they want, let's say there was an investigation during the year, and the outcome of the investigation is still not yet known. And in the county officer's report, the county officer told you, talks about the investigation. Then we think, you would think that when you look at their financial statements, but if there's an investigation that goes down to filmed, there is potentially a labor expenditure in the account. But before the investigation is controlled, you wouldn't know the heat. Okay, so that's where you draw your attention, you say, is there a telecom of the report that used for this investigation? Okay. You just say, so you, when, you read, when you look at the financial statements, you look at it with respect to what is stated in the county officer's report regardless. But as I say, it doesn't mean the whole thing. This is not a clean opinion. Only if I'm drawing your attention, please have a look at that when you read, take that into account with you. Okay, then the next one is the best practices on how to achieve good administration. You will see that what will happen is when you report, I mentioned earlier that when we, you know, one of the actions, the last part of the audit report, we will report the internal control deficiencies. Those internal control deficiencies speak about in these three areas, leadership, financial and performance management, and governance. So what we're saying is that certain things in place. Certain, we will say, best practices are exercised, then you're well on your way to good administration. When you start looking at leadership, speak of conflict honesty, basically what we mentioned is same thing, tone at the top. It's basically your leadership structure that is real governance that concerns them, which is your county officer. It's setting the tone at the top with all intolerance to ages that sort of that you know, drive proper administration. For example, wastage. People not following processes. Okay, so leadership, when you set the tone at the top, say, this is the type of responsibility we've been running, this is the type of entity we're running. We will not tolerate fraud, we will not tolerate wastage, we will not tolerate honesty, ethical business practices in the government. Oversight, exercise oversight responsibility. For the most part, you know, you say you delegate, but if you don't oversee that delegation, you know, say, make sure things are progressing as required, then in all likelihood, if you look at it a year down the line, things are implementation. So that's why when you say, when you start looking at things, you're saying, you need to be oversight, leadership oversight. Top management in the department needs to take the role of making sure that what needs to be done, what is planned to be done, is being done, and that there are feedback structures to make sure that things are being achieved. Then we say that effective human resource practice. Basically, on the leadership side, it's saying the right person for the job, that you've got the skills, got the capacity. If you don't have the capacity, that you identify the capacity to ensure that you have the right people to execute the right parts. That you don't have, for example, non-financial person running finance function, or a finance person running a project that has no view or clue on, for example, the finance person in the position, you know, you're not know all the aspects of your system's internal organization. And in addition, between the policies and procedures, proper processes. I think if we look at the national government session, a lot of reasons for the non-compliance was to policy development and processes. They take their time to get the details spelled out to employees so they understand what needs to be done. I said, a lot of it is inferred. You develop the policy procedure process and much better. Let me say, approve and monitor implementation of action plans suggesting term control deficiencies. Again, to come back to on this, like I say, I'm jumping now to the last slide. You see, over the years, historically, there's been a decline in the opinion. And I look at it started from a thin opinion and goes down to the qualifications in the area. And this area, you will think, approve and monitor implementation of action plans. That is especially important. This also would be one of the roles of the committee, in a sense, where on a quarterly basis, where you expect management to provide the action plan to address the internal control deficiencies and then tracking those action plans. And then prove an appropriate information technology governance system. Then financial performance management record keeping is important. What you'll see here, if I take it back to last year's opinion, on the, if you look at the findings on the performance and external objectives, a lot of it had to do with record keeping. Also, your audit certification area last year, record keeping was also a key area that it was from. The problem with record keeping is that because the number of transactions are so, there's quite a huge amount of transactions, a large number of transactions during the year, is that if there are not proper processes to reconcile and, on an ongoing basis, and you don't keep proper records of it, going back to design correctly is going to be a mess of exercise, a mess of dust. And it's almost undoable. Then, we say maintain effective control, we still alien monthly processing and the reconciling of transactions. So, please, I need to emphasize the daily, monthly control and reconciliation. For the most part, a lot of entities, these happen in financial year and the financial statement are being produced. So that basically happens between April and when the financial statements are submitted for collective May. So those 2 months, a lot of work is getting done in 2 months. The 12 months of work is getting done in 2 months. Whereas it should have been done on a daily basis. Okay. If you don't do that, like you can't see because you can't remember what happened in April, on the 1st of April 2013, and now it's coming in May 2014, so okay, what is there? You keep it going. Okay. And then monitor compliance with applicable legislation and produce regular accident and key financial performance information. That is important in the sense that in addressing some of the deficiencies, what the department would require to do is produce information, it's almost like into a paper, a trial. So they would have to produce financial information more regularly. As a verification, although there's a large number of assets in the department, you would have to unregister that yes. Okay, there would have to be income set. The income set of financials also need to have research process with all this to make sure that it's a liable set of information. Then the governance structures, we ensure that risks are periodically identified, assessed, and tracked. Mitigated, that comes to your audit committees. I'm saying audit committees, so audit from governance, as I said, is when those risks are identified, you must make sure that they're tracking again, tracking those risks to say, our maintenance actions mitigate the risk. Internal audit needs to adequately prepare the data. I think if you look at your department offices, coming back to that, your head of internal audit was suspended sometime. In between that suspension, other personal suspension, you couldn't appoint someone in a permanent role as head of internal audit. But you had people in acting posts. So you had a person suspended from National Treasury and now you have someone in this role that's not permanent. So in order for you to have the effective internal audit function, you need though the workplace is in China, you know, it's quite acceptable, but it means if you look to the future, you would have to get someone permanent into that role. And then, same thing, in order to make the world that form this legislature, you can promote accountability and service. So, I think at the end of the day, it's very true to say, well, you have a function in order to material. I think, as I mentioned earlier, it's an order to force to promote. So, it's to drive the process to get some in this position where you can actually do what the results are. We start off and there's a report in the department that can use that they do there. And you report in the report you can get your financial statements, say your audit report and your performance report. Then we say the understanding of the mandate that the oversight committee is looking at the understanding of the business and the department in the annual report. The statement is that the devil is in the detail. The information is in your account of the report. It's important to understand that you know, you need those documents and understand what the account office is mentioning there. It also gives you insight into the risks and the marks and faces we'll face in the future. And the actual grading process is basically what we do is the general. It is a group of courses. We give you, you know, what went right, what went wrong, and what are the reasons for it. What is our recommendation for improvement? What action plan? Give you feedback on what action has been taken. Also, give you feedback on what commitments were made in the past, and how have they been honored in terms of management in the past. Then, the recommendation by oversight committees, and what we're saying in terms of this recommendation that needs to be must have milestones and conform to smart. It's almost like we say your annual performance plan. So when the farmer puts an action plan to say, the needs to be taken, there's certain action that are better than the dimension. So say on a quarterly basis, the feedback is provided. It's to get a proper understanding in terms of the annual performance report, the annual report of the farm, then you have put clear milestones on in terms of what is expected. Because then, you know, that in order for the process to be effective, that you make sure that the department is complies with certain requirements of the committee. And then there's the fourth essential to the director for implementation. Then the action plan in progress reporting. Again, we say entities must comply with action plan to assess the deficiencies that the department has. I think the importance also is for that you get it sooner rather than later. It needs to give a time frame. You know, because at the end of the report, also because the report takes quite a while, management and the county officers should have a clear understanding of what they're doing. And action should have already been put in place while the audit has been finalized, you know, looking at the future. So from that perspective, it shouldn't take a long time to develop the for an entity to develop it. And especially if you look at the home affairs, the department, if you look at the past years, they have been action plans, but the problem is those action were late. You know, if you look at the year for last, the 2011-12 financial year, the action plan was only developed around about February. So if you look at it, the financial year, March. So what can you do from February to March? So it's important that there's any action. Okay. I think also in this financial year there were actions, but it was not, you know, sometimes like when you put something on a piece of paper and you show people how something, okay, then if you see what you need to achieve, where you go. But if you start speaking about it, it's not committed to paper and there's no detail surrounding it, then you're not going to get a line approach. Not everyone's going to do the same thing. That's true, buying is on. But if you get this one, it's sufficient. It's the process, a leader process that everyone understands. That not each one to do his own thing and then you come to both March and you come to financial statement and then you look at it and say, you know what I expected. And then they must be reporting on progress. And then when you say reporting on progress, you must not be saying they're doing well. Maybe 90%. Like when you ordered, when you order three determined objective and when the department says or an entity says that they achieve 90%, 79% of what? How did you order this calculation? Then we ordered the calculation. And the same like if some people believe the entity says, well, I've achieved 90% of my actions that comes in. So what does it mean? Who the key deliverable tells the item to check it for 80-90%? So what you think it's been hard in part. They don't say it must be smart, it must be specific, it must be measurable, it must be achievable, relevant and timely, very important, achievable. You know, so it's a question of a lot of times that something not going to take financial year to address. It's not going to take 3 months, 6 months. Something to work for a longer trip, but plus, sometimes like I said, it's sort of problem, but it's not simple. We just need to be reasonable in terms of what we can achieve. Next slide is the pacing process. This is what I spoke about. It's just another format, basically, when you can do like you say, annual report, your briefing notes, your kind of input, material reports, your estimate of national extension, date of nation, budget fee. Those two items you have to look at the basically your budget and how you use that funds to deliver on the mandate to achieve the required objectives. As I mentioned earlier, it's important to see the correlation between the two. The financial statements and the financial information correlates with the performance information in the forms of the department. You cannot see those in isolation, those two items, those two forms in isolation because it's the same. How do I use those resources to achieve those objectives? I think we've touched on this already in the earlier in terms of what laws and regulations are applicable. And then, that's our example report. Grace mentioned it goes to the example report. Starting with the first one, your introduction to the basically the same information that you can order to. First, set up the financial statement, and what this audit report is aligned with the national statement. There are certain requirements that needs to be reported as well. If you look at the introduction and the responsibility of the entity, it's a regular statement. The county office's responsibility we take it from the PSMA and any applicable legislation that would lead to the county office's responsibility. For example, in this report in paragraph 2, we speak of the Division of Revenue Act. In home affairs, you do not find that reference to the Division of Revenue Act because there are no Division of Revenue Act grants. There were no follow-up payments to other entities of the Department of Home Affairs. Home Affairs has got transfer payments that relates to the IEC, GPW, government printing work, and film and publication support. Beyond it, it doesn't have any grants that, is, that are promulgated because of the Division of Revenue Act. Then the next, the following paragraph, what is the general responsibility? That basically sets up the AGA's responsibility, the audit or the AGA's responsibility in terms of Public Audit Act. It explains what in paragraph 4, it explains what an audit is, you know, why would you, when you, what is the scope of the audit. And then you look at the paragraph 6, it starts off with basis for qualified opinion. This thing has a qualified opinion, then you have why you then the paragraph explaining why it comes to qualified opinion. These paragraphs will say in these areas like for this you can expenditure, for this you can get a material misstatement, 8.2 million.
Finnish, but understated that Finnish was not accounted for, which is a value of 8.2 million yen. So as you look at it, you think there are material mistakes to that amount. So that's why we face the qualification paragraph. Okay. Then the regular expenditure, Google General, and those three are all qualification paragraphs as well. They set out the material misstatement in a disclaimer of opinion paragraph. You normally find all limitations. The limitation paragraph, you wouldn't refer to the amounts because you don't know what they have. And so you're saying, well, there's insufficient documentation to tell you what the error is, so it won't be. That's why you stay away from what the error is. You wouldn't mention what the error is. Then there's limitation. And if there are a number of limitations, as I mentioned earlier, it comes to the basis. So you have several items in your financial statement. And the easiest way to look at it is you take a highlighter. And you highlight items in the financial statement that are qualifying, then you as a user will get a view of, you know, what type of thing in the financial statement. So if you start going to the financial and say, well, most of the things in the financial statements qualify, then probably start looking and say, well, adverse or disclaimer of opinion. That's where the concept of permissiveness comes in. Permissiveness also looks at the financial statement item. So for example, if you took a department and you couldn't get assurance on the appropriation or the appropriation that comes through from national basis, but it goes into the income line item, the revenue line item. And this is a big part of the department. It's basically saving money and spending those funds to service levy. But this is a big part of the financial. And you can't get assurance on that big part of the financial. You probably also have moved your display to say, what really fundamentally drives this entity, and then I'm getting sure something that also means the length of the item. So it would not only mean the number of items, it could be that one item is so significant that if that item is a financial on that item, then you send the whole set of financials because everything else in the financial statement is just of that item, just in terms of how the item is used. To give an example, if you were another department that is a property owner. You can get insurance, just you could get insurance on all the other vendors but not on the property value. Then you probably split with the disclaimer and just say, so that's essentially what the department does, and that is a big part of the financial statement. So then you move on to a qualified opinion. In this way, in the most department, the most entities, let's say, we mentioned earlier, when it is unqualified, then you wouldn't have the basis for qualified opinion paragraph, which is an opinion. You would read along the line that it says that the financial thing is fairly presented. And they will not be accept for it. You get a qualified opinion paragraph, start with my opinion and says except for. In an unqualified paragraph, you wouldn't have the except for, so you exclude that from the sample. Then after your letter, then after your qualified opinion, then you have your emphasis on that, or sorry, your opinion paragraph, you have your emphasis on that paragraph. In this case, we refer to significant uncertainty. Significant uncertainty will normally draw users to certain things that have not been, other things around certain things. Normally, if you take an entity, it will be still a contingent item. It's a loss. In a note disclosure in the financial statements, normally towards the end of the financial statement, department will or entity will disclose the loss of the department. Let's say someone has instituted a claim against the department or we're going to court for this. And of course the outcome is not known. You don't know what impact it is going to have on the financial statement. So you normally have that significant uncertainty. Or if there's a material investigation, it could have a significant impact on the financial, then you put it under significant uncertainty. But as I mentioned earlier, this emphasis of math paragraph is just one of the user's attention to it. It's not saying anything about the opinion. It's just saying, take note of that aspect of the report. One of the paragraphs should have a material underspending of the vote. That's basically where the entity has not material amount, we're saying material unspent, normally is looking at over 5% of imported fund, because again, it's going to serve the services of the investor. So, well, you're not spending the fund allocated to them, then there's a question of how the services are delivered. After the terms of the matter, we have the additional matter paragraph as well, which also to draw users' attention. In this case, we still have material inconsistencies. We may not have that in all political and public supplementary schedules. This is what you find on all national demand reports. Your financial reporting permit. This paragraph here is included in cases where, you know, mostly refers to your financial statements, your national department financial statements, your financial report paper, which is not a presentation statement. Then the next part of the report is highlighting two reporting other legal and regulatory requirements. It deals with the reporting pre-findings of the reporting pre-needs of objectives and your non-compliance areas. As I mentioned, you know, earlier we said, in terms of page, we speak of we evaluate in terms of usefulness and liability of information on next page of that, okay. If there aren't any findings, then we would not mention anything. As I mentioned, it is normally significant, it's material items that I evaluate to see that they're included. There are certain things that are minor items, minor issues that will not be included. And then below that, then we have our compliance paragraph. And then turn the page, next page you have on the right hand side, you can talk about these things in this report. Basically, you start seeing of internal control. There will be the assessment of internal control deficiencies that cause all this. They cause the point by opinion, they cause the findings of these and the objectives, they cause the non-compliance issues. So, we basically summarize it. Look at those things later, where, as I mentioned earlier, leadership, financial and performance management, and governance. Look at those three areas, the internal control deficiencies. Those areas that have been defined. And if you turn the page, the last page, when we speak of other reports, basically, if there are any other reports that have been issued on the register, if there are investigations that have been completed or in progress, we refer to those in the second report, and then we also refer to any other audits performed, for example, clear on procedures engagements or any performance audits or any other orders or what they have done, for example, reviews or limited scope reviews, refer to it. That's basically the layout of your audit report. I think just for certain things, I think if you want to understand the framework that it can be financial compiled, for example, if you look at, for example, irregular expenditure, you may take three departments and say, okay, this department here has incurred 100 million irregular expenditure this year, that department has incurred zero this financial year. It doesn't mean that the one is just getting paid for film books that is in the other one. Now, this is, an example is that the way the framework is set up is that if irregular expenditure is discovered in department or entity, that needs to be investigated by the accounting officer or the accounting authority. So, if at the end of the financial year when you pay your financial company before that investigation is not completed, then you don't disclose that you have expenditure, but you have a narrative to say, I'm calling this investigation. So when you interrogate that, it is important to understand it, to say, you have to look at, you can't compare the two, but then you look at the investigation progress. So under your irregular expenditure notes as well as the department, you look at the investigation in progress to say what investigations are in progress regarding these areas, what's been done. Because in the next financial year, it could result in irregular expenditure in financial year. But it's not very important to understand the relation that goes with financial data. The framework that is created. Then the next slide is basically a gist of the audit opinion for the Department of Motor.
this the 10-11 financial year, because that orange one, that is the one where we're saying the opinion was unqualified on other matters. Those matters predetermined objectives and the goals and regulation. So if you look at 8, 9, 9, 10, 2008-9 is almost a mirror of 2012 this year. Okay, so if you look at the matters there, almost the same. What you have there, you know, from 2008-9 to 2010, qualification deadlocks, yes, 10, then you get clean opinion, 11, 12, and it starts going down in the 10, so it's all of a sudden found reached a peak again. The reason for these things is sustainability of management. Okay, so when processes are put into place to address certain internal control deficiencies, it shouldn't be a one-time event or short-term. It must be able to say, putting things in place that will hold us in good stead from before. And it means continuous monitoring of these processes and enhancing of the internal controls. Because what we also need to bear in mind is that your accounting frame for managing towards first partners is also evolving. You understand? And your business economy needs to be faced with those sort of frameworks. So you can't have yesterday's solutions to manage this problem. So essentially that's why it's sustainable to manage. So in the short term, you may be able to cover the gap. But as time marches on, you don't have proper action in place. So we can almost say that your doctor in India, you had several qualification areas. And yes, as I said, it's all about 2008. So that means actually now. And there are problems in those areas. So, like we spoke about for cleaning and research, we looked at leadership, we looked at financial performance measures, we said proper systems and process, daily associations, regular oversight, action plan. All those areas that you have to have those in place, because if you don't have that in the head of our region, you're not going to sustain this, the level of your systems, your level of internal control, your level of administration, if you like. So this is the end of the presentation here. If there's any questions,
thank you very much for the comprehensive presentation. I think it has made our heads a little bit open and almost seek to professionalize ourselves to the serious analysis of audit opinion. And we hope that what we are getting different from yourself, it will enhance our work, our oversight work moving forward. Honorable members, any other issues that can be raised for further clarification, especially when you look at that last page that you are just from, and given that we still, I think, don't have a CFO in the room of it, I think we still don't have, and then and looking at those crosses for the column of 12-13, how many of those crosses are going to kill this time? And then and also the chronic crosses that we have from 10-11 until 12-13 on predetermined objectives and compliance with the laws and regulations. Where are we going to kill these ones with the current audit? Only God knows. We will possibly have to talk to the department and we'll have a briefing sometimes where they will actually indicate to ourselves how they are actually going about trying to make quite a good number of those crosses to disappear. I've noticed Honorable Nancy another one who have got some sort of clarification. None can we proceed to the total name?
Thank you very much, sir. Say I'm happy about this presentation. I've been attending in fact this presentation from the aging office. And I still have an understanding. But the question that you're raising, how I'm going to kill those actors there, I want to raise it the other way directly to the aging. Because of, I'm interested in certain things here. And my understanding is that when the causes are too many, someone's supposed to be accountable. And in terms of the PFMA and the MFMA, there are consequences which are stipulated in these acts. Now my question is, who is having powers to ensure that these consequences are implemented? I mean, whenever this acts are like that, then one who's supposed to be accountable, then the person be held accountable. I understand I've read too many issues reports of different municipalities, but you find there there are recommendations and whatever, but at the end, nobody follows. So my question is, I'll be happy if staff we can be truthful. I understand that there is someone that's supposed to be acting, who's not acting. Is it parliament, is it the department, or is it the AG, or I'm not sure. But what is clarity on that question? Thank you.
Okay, thanks. I think that is just one question. I think also with the audit, I think audit that has to be executed. I think one of the objectives that was mentioned was to prevent abuse, for abuse of public resources. How is that done? Preventing abuse. But to detect the abuse, I'm a little bit clear how we can, you know, how that the audit can detect. But preventing the abuse, how is that done? And then the other issue that maybe we just need to be a lot more loud and clear is with the audit, there is an audit a report that's out, then there is this management report, or called management letter, whatever. Which one the audit should be worried about and be serious? Is it the audit, that the audit report, or the management report or letter that we issue at the end of the audit, or both? Which one actually assists the ODT when you move out and then you issue eventually after you have issued both documents? And then the other issue I've seen in the template that we have actually talked to, that you do mention some other matters relating to the audit committee and the internal audit. But during the audit itself, do you really audit the work of an audit committee in the audit team? In terms of the work that they have supposed to have done, or meetings that they've said, and then report that they've produced, whether they went to in the form of, in the case of a municipality, whether those reports have actually surfaced in the council meeting, and what were the responses, and whether those responses were followed. Do you really audit the work of the audit committee of the audit team and comment to an extent that whoever is reading can make a good guess whether that audit committee went to exist in that Odichi or does he need to attend this? I think that would be just one of my clarification issues. You can take that. You've got something to raise. Honorable Kenya, I'm seeing the hand that is going up a little slowly. And you want to make any good address?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
Just after Honorable Dutton.
Yeah, it is very worthy. I just wanted to check with the AG whether are there any other measurements, because now you are on the second test in putting measurements in place. Are you watching or assisting that person that we do not have this kind of access? And what can we really assist? What information can we do to really to prevent the kind of access? Because this is terrible. We should really hold up this kind of performance.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome. My area, which is the university, but the only part that is also making us to protect slowly is because of the numbering of the snipes. Because even now I don't know how to put it, but I think under the heading that talks to the annual audit process, there are those that the auditors have said, it's described that the auditor say, knows what to do, maybe what to after do. Yes, you have underlined what is supposed to be done, what is supposed to be done by the auditor. And I'm concerned about the risk response on the issue of procedures that are performed so terribly that the financial statement and annual performance report do not contain material statements, and that the declared reason has been complied with. That paragraph now relates to last slide talking about really noting that only in 10-11 that we have had and acquired in the office of Ted and are qualified on his report. Now, when you look at what's happening, as you said, there are so many crosses, and you know that now it's there's a deterioration when you look at great qualification. Even though in 9-10 you can't see the good crosses so far. Now, the question is that, I don't know what I've done, it goes hand in hand with the measuring of the SMTPI. And that this indicators of what is happening. I don't know whether there is a need for the management, there is a need for, let's say, training of the committee, or I don't know. Maybe, because my understanding, I think that the auditors are those people that are initially trained. But when you look at what is happening on this last slide, as compared to what is said on that page I'm talking about. So what may be the remedy? What can you remedy? What is happening? Except when you look at any indicators, the SMPI indicators. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks. Maybe on your responses also just include the fraud risk investigation. You said that also, I think, is assist your regularity audit. Who calls upon that for an investigation to happen? And on what basis will you call upon that unit to do that investigation?
I think the spelling for the first
Krishna, consciousness of Krishna. You know. The slide, one of the slides on the combined shoots.
Analysis done.
what you control, what is in line, you know, did you, was the expenditure mandated, did you overspend for no apparent reason or something like that, so that will give you that pilot, but I think maybe in a, those are areas that sort of mitigate, that concern, mitigate the risk of abuse, so to speak, but I think if you start catching abuse, you know, like you will probably have that focus there, because the focus is going to be, you've got a concern for it, then the focus is always in a certain area, if it comes towards that, you know, in the performance of it, you know, if you start looking at those, then you can say, in a specific area, you would like to look at it, but as part of the regularity, all this part of the overhead rules, that is, you sort of get the level of assurance that the risk is mitigated to a certain then the audit report and management report. The audit report is what everyone worries about because that's the one that's publishing what everyone sees. Okay, so but that is what the mandate is, that is what we need to produce an audit report. Actually, the audit report is the roll-up of the management report. Okay. Management report just gives you the detailed findings. So essentially, for management to do an action plan, they would go back to the management report and address all the issues that are significant issues that are highlighted in that report. But as I say, what we found over the years is that the concern is regarding the public document, not for our government. So, but that's what it is. Okay. There's a lot of detail in there, and I think you can even take it, and that's where a lot of entities start the action plan, the study of the nation report, and then it goes fine. In terms of the audit committee, the evaluation, the audit committee, there was a question whether we audit the audit committee. We do an evaluation of the audit committee on the basis of the regulations, the legislation. So basically, it will look at the treasury regulations, it will request certain things of an audit committee. Then we look at best practices for audit committees in terms of do they know the meeting, how regulars do they meet. You know, how do they enable oversight, so to speak? How do they fulfill their oversight function? You look at things like their, do they operate in terms of fully constitution, like what we call the charter, so their constitution. Have they done what they had to in terms of their charter? So for the most part, and what you find is that if there are certain areas, where you'll find that, if you find the committee wanting, but in terms of the legislation, then those will be reported. But for the most part, it's a question of, our evaluation goes along the lines in terms of what the legislation requires of an audit committee. Okay. In terms of the constitutional charter. I think the challenge that you would have, for example, is that for the most part, people can be taking the blocks. Put in the blocks and hit the blocks, you can tick off all the blocks, but you may not, by just hitting the blocks, you may not be doing an effective role, you know, so fully effective role. You can say, I attended the whole meeting and it's open, but at the end of the day, the proof in the pudding, so to speak, so you're not showing any results there. That could be a different view of it. But I think when we start looking at the outcomes of of an entity, we also relate it back, and when I speak of the internal control deficiency paragraph, we relate it back to an area of governance to say how effective was governance in that area. And if there was a significant lack, then we would highlight it in the internal control deficiency paragraph. As far as the compliance that is non-compliance, then it will obviously come under the non-compliance paragraph. But beyond that, that's how we deal with the evaluation of the audit committee in terms of what they do. Then the next question is the actions, what actions are required from the portfolio committee. What is this slide? I think it's further down where it says, it gives you the process, the briefing process. This slide here. When we say the actual briefing process, if I look at that column, and I say recommendations by oversight committees. And that's where we're saying that, when the oversight committee, when you start looking at you know, after the reading process, after you've listened, you know, with the spark, then you look at what actions are required, what you'll expect the department from the action to. But again, as you're saying, you know, we speak of it and we say it must be smart. You know, it must be like a performance check. It mustn't be any fair. I think I mentioned and said, you know, the 90%. You know, they say when a person, when someone says that 90% complete, and you can't verify that 90%, then you've got a problem. Understand? So then, look at the actions that the department's got to take and say, does those actions address my concerns and address and will it take us somewhere along the line? And how does those actions differ from the actions you've had in the past? And then say, what are you doing differently? Because if you say, well, in the past 2 years, for example, this is our outcome, then we need something different. We can't, you know, we can't do the same thing. Like we say, you run to that wall which you had against the wall at first, and you try to hit 5 times, you're still going to get the same outcome. So you need to have a different approach, in a sense. And from my side, as you said, you know, tracking their progress, quarterly basis, understanding what has been done, what needs to be done, whether the department's going off track or is on track, what amendments need to be made to that plan. Understand the entire process there. I think from the committee end, if you have that action plan, as I mentioned in the past, those action plans came late, they weren't detailed enough, so it didn't give assurance regarding whether the department was going to achieve what it said to achieve. And for the most part, I guess it's, if you look at it, you're talking about a pretty huge part, you understand? Actions cannot be objectives. So, you can have a high-level objective, for example, to say, I'm going to address all the non-compliance issues. It does not tell you how, with what, when, you understand? So, it's to have the specifics in place. Then the remedy, we're saying, what is the remedy for performance information? It's an easy one. Okay, we spoke to the, I think, the senior administration, and we said when we look at those areas, we spoke of leadership, financial and performance information. In the area of financial and performance information, we spoke about document control. You understand? And it is the department's biggest problem, is that the result that's been reported cannot be substantiated by information. I'm not denying that they may have taken place, it's just the documentation is, as I say, it's a financial department with a lot of paperwork, so to find a document for the financial year, it's difficult for the department to find it, because in the audit, you're coming for audit, some of the documents cannot be produced. Also, goes back to your quarterly, your oversight rules. When we say leadership oversight, we think, though, if we can verify this, then how did, so your quarterly performance processes, how did you get assurance that those things were correct? Because surely someone checked it down the line and verified this. So it speaks about your consolidation, what you speak of daily lesson. But for the most part, mostly it's got to do with processes, documents that can be provided for audits. then fraud risk investigations. On the fraud side, as I say, from a regulatory audit, we consider fraud, not specifically data audits. We consider fraud risks and design procedures there, those risks. For example, to give an example, as I say, in procurement, we consider procurement as containing high level fraud. So that's why we do extensive work and extensive computer-assisted audit techniques in that area. But the fraud risk investigation, it's a question, it's on a request. And in the sense that what happens is, from an audit perspective, a regularity audit identifies fraud, and the audit was to confirm that there is potential fraud, then there needs to be a report to the appropriate structures within the department, which would normally be your entity, which would be your, depending on where that fraud is occurring, so you normally have your accounting authority or accounting officer or your executive authority, and then there will be a request for that person for that structure to take action and to give assurance to the auditors that any action be taken. In certain, and then that action could come in the form of a request that the Auditor General does that investigation pertaining to the allegation of fraud, or it could get the entity could get another external party to do the fraud investigation. Like for example, Department of Home Affairs, or think most likely they will use their counter-corruption unit. Okay, because it's a huge branch that looks specifically at fraud, so I would guess they would use that. But it's just to give assurance that there is someone investigating it. It's not necessary, but like I said, the request could come. You know, if there's a request to the Auditor General, then it will be concerning, and then there will be a decision taken whether it's conducted by the Auditor General. But in the audit process, because our investigative unit or the forensic unit that does the mitigations, because they've got extensive expertise, you know, in terms of identifying risk factors, you know, what are red flags in the you know, that could potentially be fraud or misrepresentation, then, you know, use them in their process like, you know, risk identification and developing appropriate procedures. They also provide training how to either to other auditors and obviously to other parties that provide training and things in the government. But that's how we use the fraud, how fraud risk is addressed. Necessarily, investigation would be a request, but it could be the entity or the Auditor General's unit. I think also when you speak of fraud, you know, from all perspectives, you speak of two types of fraud. You speak of misappropriation and financial statement fraud. Misappropriation is what we all know, it's theft, abuse of systems. Financial statement fraud is where management mistakes, intentionally mistakes financial statements. They know this error because when we get the financial statements, there's a representation by the account officer or accounting authority that the financial statements are free of material misstatements, that they process them in court and that the information is credible. But if there's something there, but in an audit you may come across that management is not being transparent or open about certain things, you know, or information is withheld. It would be from the financial statement fraud, and that's what we all take into account as auditors when we do the audit of the financial statement. Honorable Chair, I think that's all the questions. I hope I've answered all of them. Is there any clarity for the third team?
Yeah, I think the main purpose is actually to empower us to do the work that we need to do to raise the red flag when we see that certain things are not going in the right direction. And of course, you know, the things that we pick up on either the annual report or any other presentation by the department and we feel that there is something wrong, we may demand the department to come and brief us on that specific item in which we feel that certain things may not be right. And I think we have been empowered. Honorable Rafut.
How are you saying this?
You have to put the mic on. Let's find where you can press.
Okay. I was saying that the AG, it is already now in 2040. Okay, and now we are on, it is now 6 months. So, is there not any way that we can be able to assist on this rate? That, let's see the comments now. Whether are there any kind of, you know, closing the gap on this, so that we must not get ourselves wanting. Because this is the annual report for 2020, now we are 6 months on the second, so is it not, can't you give us where are we now? I think on the, when it comes again, so the AG must come again, so that we should see what actually, how are we performing.
Okay, I think we are awaiting the 2013-14, the 2013-14 audit outcome. It's still coming. It's still coming. And then if we all praying to the same God, maybe the process may not be as they reflect in here. We may be seeing maybe an improved situation. We don't know, but it's still coming. And you can attempt to clarify that question.
Yes, just on what we requested from management of the department and through the executive, you know, through our engagement to the executive, is that, you know, if you look at last year and you look at the year before, you know, like the last year, you know, talking about drop 13 or 13, 14, and 11 drop, the audit, you know, the audit was done when there was management requested, you know, or the county officer and the executive authority requested an extension to the audit finding. And then you finish the audit eventually, I think, in the one day in October and the other year in September. So now remember, if you finish your audit reports in September and October, as you mentioned, as the member mentioned, that you're already 6 months in the financial year. You understand? So it mentions the ending to the still trying to close up the previous year's audit, and you're not attending to issue, and you're already 6 months behind. Understand? So what we had in our recent engagement with the executive in July, we said that we want around about the end of October, we want to do an interim audit. And we want all those areas that are the subject of disqualification. Mm-hmm. We want your first effort on them. You understand? From maybe they need to present information, those areas must be good so you can audit it. But that's where your problem is. As the Auditor General, we can suggest, you know, we make recommendations, follow-up and actions that have been done, and then audit the changes, you know, the implementation of the actions through interim audits. That's what we can do. But we must get into the process, you know, because I think over the past 3 or 4 years, there's always been a promise. Like, for example, if you look at the efforts, it's been a problem. And we've always asked for an early effort register. We asked for it. We said, give it to us around about March or April so we can audit it, we can tell you what's wrong, and then you can go and you can look at it, you know, the inter-control division system. But it hasn't been forthcoming. Understand? So it's a question of, it's just not about an interim audit, because an interim audit is like a heads up. You understand? You say, these are the potential areas that you need to plug, you know, guess or actions you need to take. But so that's what we can do. But what we've done is, as I said, through the engagements we had with the executive, one of the things we requested was that, you know, when we go to 13-14 audit, we want this, you know, we said, well, 3 months after that audit, the closure of that audit, which was 31 August, we said, so September, October, so beginning of November, we want a set of financials that we can audit, and all the information that can be audited. So that's the big problem. And as I mentioned earlier, a lot of actions get done towards the end of the financial year. Look at the things in April relating to what happened before.
So if one needs to sum up, can we say that there is an element of non-cooperation? Can I go to that extent? Or is it too much for me to say that? You may not respond to that question. I know the predicament that I'm putting you on. And it's fine. And then the interim audit as well. It is a non-obligatory audit. It is just a service that you want to present to the department to assist you to move forward. Or are they obliged to grant you that opportunity to do an interim audit?
The department the size of the Department of Homeland Security, any entity the size of Homeland Security, understand? From an audit perspective as well, you have to do an interim audit because it also cuts down on your work, you understand, going forward. Otherwise, you're doing a lot of work towards the end. You know, in the last few months, you know, before you sign off. But the idea of interim audit is, as I said, clear as that. It also is us as auditors in terms of the amount of effort we do going forward. But, so that's why we, you know, in any entity that has got good systems, good processes, is interim audit. And we're trying to get your to it. You know, they have got structures and they have quarterly reviews as well, like your internal auditors, but they do have an interim audit. And that's what we're trying to get all the entities, all the departments to that stage, where because if things are running seamless, it should be, because your audit should be in debt. You understand? Your internal audit shouldn't be in debt where, you know, both resources are now channeled for, because business as usual, the auditors, you know, auditing on the side. But I think the problem is it becomes an event, because the process, But as I said, yes, I mean, we're trying to drive towards it. We do an interim every year. The problem is the scope of the interim. We can't do proper interim. You normally not touch on areas which management is busy fixing or correcting. But then, if you look at it, look back for those areas we haven't qualified them, so you're just auditing the areas that are. They have no issues, obviously, as you understand. But with the intention of going forward, you can reduce the amount of work.
Okay. All right. I think we need to turn to the office of the Auditor General, and then, of course, is that headed by Naveen. But you did not assist me to how to pronounce the pen. I'm not sure whether you know what it is, if it is big and distorted.
My apologies, Chair, but you very perfectly to Mulu.
Mulu. Okay. Yes, let's thank Mr. Mulu and assisted by Ozanel for having conducted this presentation, this workshop. And honorable member, I think we have a responsibility of really studying this presentation because there's a comprehensive information and try and link the information for them to make a narrative that can formulate a tool that we should be using moving forward. And also thank the office of the Auditor General and indicate that there is a possibility that when we engage the department on its annual report, we may require that you assist us in linking the performance that is being mentioned in the annual report together with the audit outcome, and so that we are able to list the correct issues that need to be lifted and followed, to ensure that there are specific action plans that deal with those specific matters. But thank you very much for having honored this particular invitation, and also excelling in performing the work that is expected you to do. And we thank you a million. And I think on this score, we can release you. There is no danger for idling, but you don't need to rush taking your best. But you are me. You can take your best if you want to, at any rate that you want. There are no secrets that you have to conduct in the meeting. Thank you very much. Honorable members, I think we need to look at our internal work. Honorable members, we have got a report of the induction workshop that was conducted on the 29th of July. I have looked at the report and tried to remove all sorts of things that may have not made us happy in the form of mistakes, failings and all that. And I just wanted to put it to you. But let me check, do you have the copies all of in front of you? It says draft report of the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs on the induction workshop held on 29 July. through September 2014. Are we having reports in front of us? And can I take for granted that you have read it, because I think it should have been attended to in many meetings which we did not have time, and then is there anybody that has anything to raise in relation to that report or the induction? I would actually expect from Honorable Fuslan, Kuti, Kenya, those that were present in that workshop. If there is nothing to raise, that means Honorable Kenya.
And take to on the last bullet, on the last bullet,
yeah,
on the paragraph that was to a committee.
Yes.
Now, I would like to check also the last bullet, if there's any omission on the last sentence, that says, maybe they can let the study select, meet the committee, may meet on any day and at any time, lose the holiday, which is not a working day. On a day on which the assembly is not sitting, the time when the assembly is sitting, or sitting as this, now I'm going to buy. I'm not supposed to say that is not sitting. But I imagine if I can meet in what the
correct.
Yes.
Is it correct as that it has been captured?
Huh.
Yeah. Other provision, the committee has been given, is it when the house is sitting. But when you have, I think you make a necessary request. This is just theoretical, how it is, but I mean it's but practically, the house chairs and everybody, then they try to ensure that when the house is sitting, then this doesn't happen, but always the same committee sees why the house is sitting. It does happen.
Yes, I can accept. But I was saying it is eating. I don't know whether I'm trying to say, can you have something that talks to defending? I don't know the reason. I think, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, that's just in case that we were not simply being told what is supposed to be happening. And the rule book. Salmo, you are the person that was presenting on this. Can you just verify that you accepted? Yes.
Yes,
yes, and then what the committee has as rights of.
Yes, not present at the workshop.
Yes.
It's just a reflection of Rule 138,
yes.
G, Roman 1-4, which the rule states. In terms of the meetings of committees, so that's just a factual statement.
Mm-hmm.
And the portfolio committee cannot amend the rules for that.
Yeah. That's correct, yeah. That's correct. But in practice, you know, it's the certain practices are made through, you know, just to frustrate the house and whatever. But in terms of the rules, that is the right that the committee has. Okay, and on that call, is anybody to propose adoption of the report?
I'm moving
forward. Who's moving? Is Honorable Kenya and Honorable Fuslega supporting? Okay. Thank you very much. And then can you go to minutes of the 19th of August? I think we were entertaining the electoral commission in E249. Also, these minutes, I think we walked up and down with them in more than two meetings, hoping to approve them. And then, but certain circumstances prevented us from looking at them. And on page one of those minutes, which is our attendance, is there anybody that has a problem?
No.
None. Then on page two, where we just welcomed and then it is just a record of the presentation of IEC. None. Then on page three, I think I would like us to look at six and make sure that what we think their decisions are things that we are actually saying, because there will have to be performance on these decisions. So I'm the committee commended the work of the IGC in conducting successful. I think it must be a comma. Successful, free and fair election. Okay? Just instead of a comma there. Then the committee believes that the integrity of the IEC is intact. Yeah. And then the IEC should consider developing innovative ways for continually communicate with voters. I think that was the proposal of Mr. Hussein or Honorable Hussein. The committee did have insufficient time to have intensive engagement. It decided to further engagement with it. No. It decided
to further engage
with it. To further engage with it during the annual report. I think we just have to read that. The main aim is that we just need further engagement, and that engagement will be when we consider the annual report. Yes, and then the chairperson will meet with the minister. I think this one should be killed. It should be killed, and this is an ongoing and talking with all the members and whatever. I don't think we need any decision on that.
Yeah.
And then the committee secretary should distribute all the induction workshop documents to members who were not able to attend the workshop on dinner. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct. I think this reflects some of those decisions that we needed action on them. Yes, Honorable Kenny.
I have to correct only on top of the second paragraph.
Yeah.
Maybe to change fast to ask separate members of the committee to first ask.
Yeah, ask. Not in the pattern. So thank you very much for assisting us on that one. Then there anybody then with those few corrections that have moved for the adoption of the minutes? Honorable Nisi is moving. Honorable Kenya is supporting. Then we then go to minutes of of 26 of us. Yes, 26 of us. So that is the meeting where we had the immigration regulations being presented to us. And then I was there, the commander of Kutum Nis and Nancy, and Honorable Hussein and Fitland were there, and the Gadi was there. On page 1. Surely no problem on that one. And then page 2. Is there any correction or none? Then on page 3. Then we can also talk to the decision. The sixth one, we agreed with the department to continue the implementation of the regulations and also to deal with unintended consequences. And then the department should improve its systems and issues raised by the committee should be attended to as soon as possible. And the committee requires the department to conduct a research on a number of children traveling into and out of South Africa with their parents. The fourth one, then the Swamiji will invite the departed to come and breathe on new Zimbabwean special project. And after that, I think the committee went to Barak Street office of the department for an oversight, which I think the report is, as the fact report is prepared for that. We will meet it in the next meeting. Yeah. Anybody have a problem? If no problem, anybody who moves for adoption? Honorable Rakud is moving for the adoption. And who is supporting her? Honorable Ness is supporting. Thank you very much on the minutes of the 26th. Then do I have any other minutes now? It's the minutes of the 2nd of September. Okay. Minutes of September. This is the one meeting which we did not correct. But we need you to give us life on this minute. That's when we are dealing with the government changing work. On page one, that is almost Rafuji and Mr. Kirkland and myself. And Mr. Messi, yes. Okay, and then on page two, and then on page three, the committee noted the conference presentation by certain plans to table the Printers Bill to Parliament in the near future. And plans to table the Printers Bill to Parliament in the near future. The bill will concern GPW and carbon components. Right? Right? Position? Is that a statement of fact that what they said?
Yeah,
I think we're just moving to the top. It's not a decision. And even the printer's bill will be tabled by the minister, not the government printer. That is a statement, it will just go up on the top. And then the COVID will give the issue of salary dispensation, figures attention, that's correct. The committee welcomes the security features of the ID smart card that make it difficult for it to be produced. It is a statement of fact as well, it's not a decision. Let's just move it up to the top. It's just a statement that we... Then four, GP needed to review organogram, particularly that the number of senior managers that have been reduced, that's correct. We agreed with them that they must go and review it because they're not agreeing with their own organogram. Then the minutes of the meeting held on that's correct. Yeah, I think we just removing the first one, 4.1, and then we take it as a statement to the top. Anybody has any further problem with the minutes? If not, then I should see somebody who asked me to move for adoption. Honorable Kirkland is moving, and then Honorable Rakud is supporting. Honorable members, I think that I'm not sure on the agenda there was an item for matters arising. And I'm not sure whether there is any member that has got any matter on the minutes that needs to be discussed. Starting with the minutes on the 19th of August. Is there any member that has got the issue that wanted to be discussed? But no, but those decisions are talking about, I think in general, there will be a process of everybody implementing those decisions and make sure that the report comes back. This is of none. Then the any matter from the minutes of the 26th of August in relation to inflation regulation. None. In relation to the minutes of the 7th of September is the government 21. None. Honorable members, that brings us to the end of this meeting. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much for helping me and attending this meeting.